But I'm not going to tell you the verse yet. We've spent some time since the beginning of the year looking at some of the images, the visions that Ezekiel had. And we've spent some time working our way slowly and carefully through John's Gospel, getting as far as John chapter 6. And now today we're going to be going back to this book by John Ortberg, which is all about spiritual discipline. Back in February, we talked about the importance of spiritual discipline. If you don't discipline ourselves spiritually, then we will not become spiritually fit. It's just one of these basic rules. We talked about the discipline of slowing down, or resting, or taking time. We talked about the discipline of celebrating, of rejoicing in all the good things that God has given us. And today we've come to the discipline of prayer. And I'm going to be spending just a few moments thinking about what prayer is with the help of a parable. And then we'll be spending a few more moments thinking about how we can be better disciplined in our individual prayer life. And after we've thought about that for a minute, you're going to practice it. So I'm just flagging that up now. At some point, I'm going to ask you to go and find a quiet corner all on your own somewhere in this building and practice some individual prayer. And then we're going to think about praying together. And after we've thought about that for a wee while, we're going to practice it using all these slips and pens and this cross out here at the front, okay? And then we're going to sing a song, and then we're going to have a cup of tea. And if anybody wants anything particular to be prayed for, then there'll be time for that to happen as well. So that's what we're doing. Is everybody happy? So far, so good. Nods all round. Good. So, what is prayer? We all know that everybody prays, don't we? That the most hardened atheists pray. I've had the most oddest requests made by the most unreligious of people in their moments of need for me to pray with them. Everybody prays. It's almost a sign of desperation. John Ortberg in his book calls it crisis prayers. People pray when there's nothing else they can do. You know, they've got no other things to help them. So they'll just try prayer as well, just in case, you know, just in case it works. And sometimes it does. You'd be surprised how many people are turned around their lives because in crisis, in desperation, they've said, okay, God, if you're there, I'm not sure if I believe it, but if you're there, could you just help me out just now? And woof, and it happens. And they think, oh. One of the elders in this congregation has an amazing story to tell about being in a ship. He was a sailor with a typhoon, and the typhoon wouldn't leave him, wouldn't leave the ship. Everywhere they turned, the typhoon followed them. Typhoons are scary things. And eventually he said, okay, God, if you do something with this typhoon, then maybe I'll think again about how I'm leading my life. And God did. So God does use crisis prayers. And try praying is aimed at people who are maybe never tried it. Just a way of saying to them, go on, give God a try. But if the only time you pray is when there's a crisis, then it's not really all that good for your faith. Because essentially what you're saying is you only turn to God when you've got nothing else left that you can turn to. And again, that's not very good for your faith. It's certainly not spiritual discipline. And the reason for that is because prayer is not just about asking. The common view of prayer is that it's you ask God something and then you find out whether he's real or not. And you do it in a crisis or you don't. But, you know, you come to God with a shopping list. That's, if you like, the worldly view of prayer. But that's not what prayer is. Prayer is a conversation with God. It's not just asking. It's having a chat. And here's the parable, okay? Now, it's not a parable you find in the Bible. And it is a parable, which means it's a story with a meaning behind it. Okay, it's not real. But I find it quite helpful in understanding what prayer is. an understanding about answered prayer and unanswered prayer, and where is God in all this. It's a story about a mother who has two daughters. And you may have heard me tell this story before. But it's still not real, okay? It's just a parable. But just imagine, a mother has two daughters. And every night at 6:30, the first daughter phones her mum. She's grown up, she's left home, she's gone away, she's got family of her own, but every night at 6:30, she phones her mum because she knows that that will give them half an hour to chat before Emmerdale, unless they've changed the times of Emmerdale. And so they spend half an hour every day having a chat. And they chat about everyday things, and they chat about important things. And they chat about whether it's been a good day, and they chat about whether it's been a bad day. And sometimes they're chatting about how they feel. They're feeling frustrated, or they're feeling happy, or they're feeling sad, or they're feeling worried, or they're feeling a failure, or they're feeling a success. You know, all those things, that's what it's all about. But sometimes it's about something they're concerned about. You know, they're worried about their job, they're worried about their exams, they're worried about money. So that's what the chat's about. Sometimes it's about plans. Let's meet up tomorrow. Or what we do for our holidays. Okay? That's the sort of stuff they chat about. Sometimes it's a sort of when the daughter needs mum's help. You know, I'm worried about this. Can you tell me? Can you give me some advice? Can you help me? Can you sort? Can you speak to so-and-so for me? So there's a huge variety of things that could happen in that half hour of conversation. But they do all these things for the same one reason, which is that they enjoy each other's company. That's why they do it. That's the primary reason that they're doing it. They're doing it because they wouldn't miss it for the world. And sometimes they do, and then they sort of, be good to catch up tomorrow. You know, it's a positive thing. It's a helpful thing. It's something they enjoy doing. So here's a question. Oh, no, I haven't told you about the other daughter yet, have I? I'll tell you about the other daughter. So that's the first daughter. The other daughter never phones her mum at all unless she needs something. That's all I'm going to say about her. The question is, which of these do you think has a better relationship with her mum? Well done. Gold star to Margaret. The first one. Do you all agree? Hands up if you agree. Yeah? Good. Good. So, conversation reflects relationship. And if prayer is a conversation, then prayer is a reflection of how close we are with God. Unless... Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Margaret. If you sort of wind that scene along a wee bit further, you can imagine there are times when the first daughter really needs something and she asks her mum for it and her mum can't help her. But she knows that she could if she would, and so she trusts there might be a good reason. Whereas the second daughter, if she ever asks her mum for something and her mum can't help her, she slams the phone down, goes off and half and said, "She never loved me, you know." Again, it's a reflection of a relationship. It's a reflection of trust. So here's the question for you guys. When it comes to God, what are your conversations like? What's your relationship like? Prayer, you don't have to answer that, Margaret. That's just a rhetorical question. Or it's a question for you to answer to yourself. But prayer is not just asking. Prayer is conversation. And it's a two-way thing, conversation. The types of conversation you have with God reflect the sort of relationship you have with Him. The second person, the second daughter, her conversation with her mum was rather one-sided. She only really phoned her mum when she wanted her mum to sort something out for her. It was all about me. She got upset. "You don't love me. It's all about me." Whereas the first daughter, her conversation with the mum is regular, it's balanced. And by balanced, I mean there'll be times when she tells her mum what a great mum she is, and there'll be times when she thanks her mum for something she's done, and there'll be times when she apologizes for something that she's not done to her mum or for her mum, and there'll be times when she asks her mum for something. It'll be balanced. It'll have all these things in it because it's a balanced conversation. Whereas the second daughter, it's not balanced. It's just all about asking. And the first daughter's conversation with mum is also a two-way thing. She does a fair amount of listening to her mum. What's on your heart? What's your day been like? Balanced conversation is two-way. So that's what prayer is. And I'll just leave that parable with you to think about. I find it really helpful. And I hope you do too. So what about praying on our own? Well, surprisingly, well, not unsurprisingly enough, this is something Jesus did all the time. If you read the Gospels, you find that every time he had something important to do, he didn't do it before he'd prayed or he'd spent some time in prayer. And every time he's absolutely shattered and drained and exhausted, instead of insisting on a break or a long lie, his way of recharging his batteries is to pray. And we got an example of that in the reading that you're about to look at, which is in Mark chapter 1. It's verse 35. So, just to set the scene, Jesus had just exploded onto the scene in Galilee. He was healing the sick. He was saying amazing things. People were crowding to him. Everybody wanted a piece of Jesus. He was pulled in all directions, and his fame was spreading like a tidal wave throughout the region, and people were flocking to see him, and even the religious leaders were coming, so he'd have to answer their questions as well as heal the sick and go and teach and do this and come to my village, and he'll come to my village, and he'll come to my village. And he's knackered, okay? And we come to verse 35. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Very early in the morning when it was still dark, if I was knackered, I'd be asleep. I'd be saying, switch the alarm off, shut the door, close the windows, tell them I've gone somewhere. Jesus doesn't do that. What he does, he prays. He goes off and finds somewhere on his own where he can pray to God. Simon and his companions went to look for him. When they found him, they exclaimed, everyone's looking for you. There's a sort of sense of rebuke there. You know, where have you been? You're an important person. There's these people who've got their needs. This is important work. What are you doing going off, wasting your time like this? There's a sense of rebuke in their words. Jesus doesn't rebuke them. He says, let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so that I can preach there also. That is why I've come. And so off he goes again. Prayer was where Jesus got his inspiration. It was where he got his strength. It was where he got his encouragement. Prayer was what set him up for the day. He couldn't live without it. He couldn't live without this conversation he had with his dad. He talked about it in John 15, my favorite verse, abide in me, he said, and you'll bear much fruit. What does he mean to abide? Spend time. Spend time, prayerful time. I find in my ministry, I go through dry patches. I go through, oh no, not again patches, or I have to preach on the shepherds once more. That's usually around about Christmas time. You know, those sorts of patches. Or, oh, help, £50,000, how are we going to do that sort of patches? Or, you know those sorts of patches. And usually I find when I hit those patches, it's because I'm not recharging my batteries enough. I've fallen out of the routine. I've stopped spending that time with the God who's in control and who loves me. The main thing that stops me praying regularly, like Jesus did, well, there's two things, actually, and you probably find they're the same things for you. Busyness and disruption, okay? If you're in a routine, it's fine, but then suddenly something comes out of left field and you've got to deal with it, and the next thing, you know, everything starts to unravel. Or, well, I suppose that's disruption, isn't it? The other was busyness. You just don't have the time. Oh, what have I got to do today? This is... Right, I won't pray today. I'll just carry on. And then the dry patch comes much more quickly when that happens. But the best way, so if the two enemies of regular, routine, individual prayer, which we all need, are busyness and disruption, the solution, the answer to those two things are discipline and routine. Discipline and routine. John Ortberg gives us three things. If we want to have to be disciplined in our prayer life, three things we have to do. And it's not rocket science. First thing, decide on the best time of day. Hands up if you're a morning person. Hands up if you're an evening person. Hands up if you're a lunchtime person or a middle of the night person. Okay? We're all different. We're all different. You've got to decide what your best time of don't you've got to give your best time to this conversation you have. Don't give Jesus the dregs. Give him your best time. And everyone's best time is different. I'm a morning person. My best time is never when I'm hungry. Although I make an exception for fasting. Fasting tends to work eventually when it comes to prayer. So, you know, you've got to work out when your best time is. And then you've got to make a routine out of it. Second thing, again, not rock and side, decide on your best place. Somewhere where you can be alone. Look at Jesus. He gets up, he leaves the house, and he goes way up into hills in the dark because he knows that's where he will get the quality time he needs. Where is your best place? It might be on the bus, you know, or it might be in the loo. Lock the door. My dad used to lock the door in the loo, and we couldn't get in. He was having his time. It's all right, there's another loo in that house. It's a big house. He's considerate. It might be there's a wee room just over there where I can look out across the graveyard, but I can look across at the Kirk Centre, and I usually find it's nice to have a nice view. Or you might prefer a cupboard. I don't know. Okay, but find somewhere that works for you. And you know something, and this is something John Ortberg says, and I agree, that the more you make it your routine to go there at a certain time to spend that special time with God, the more sacred that space will become for you. So the easier it'll become for you to pray there. You go to that place and already there's a sense, you know, you're tuned into the fact that you're going to be going there to pray. And then the third thing, don't be too ambitious. Don't say, right, John's right, Jesus set the way. I don't know what happened there, it was weird. But when I leave here tonight, I'm going to spend all night praying. And then I'm going to get up at the crack of dawn, I'm going to climb a hill, you know, all that sort of stuff. Well, it's nice to have big plans, but John Ortberg's advice is don't be too ambitious. Start with 5 minutes, okay? Just 5 minutes, and then build it up. Get yourself into the routine first. If you're going to run a marathon, you don't run a marathon on day one. You just start with however much you can cope with. Start with 5 minutes. The important thing is the place, the time, and the routine. And here, once you've got yourself your place, once you've got yourself your time, and once you've got yourself your allotted, you know, quantity of time that you're going to be praying for, what do you do? Here's four things you're going to do. You're going to begin with focus time. So get rid of all distractions. Switch off your mobile. Okay? Just try and get yourself that space so you're not going to be interrupted. I didn't mean just now. It's all right. Were you about to grab your mobile there? No, it's all right. Right, focus time. Time to actually still your thoughts and try and clear your head of all the things that are distracting you. And here's a second thing, and it's related to that first thing. If you find there's some things that you cannot clear, and usually they're a worry or a concern or something that's on your mind, then maybe God's saying you should spend some time talking to God about that thing. So you start with the focus time, a simple exercise, try and clear your mind. And then if there are things that can't clear, the debris if you like, then talk to God about them. You're surprised how easy it is to not let them encroach on your mind once you've talked to God about them. Just say, okay, God, I'm worried about this. Could you just hold on to it for just now? I trust you. Okay? So you're already in prayer now. You're already having that conversation. And then, once you've done all that, then you might want to do a bit of listening. Once you've dealt with all the things that are encroaching on you, all your worries, all your concerns, all the plans, you know, all that sort of stuff, once you've got that sorted, maybe you had a chat with God about one or two of those things, then it's God's time. You know, then it's time to listen. And the easiest way to do that is to read a passage from the Bible and ask God to speak to you. Again, it's not rocket science. And there's different books that can help you do that. And then when you've done all that, and when you've talked to God about the thoughts that he's given you and how it might affect your day, then here's a final thing that John Ortberg suggests, which is quite an interesting thing. He suggests that you should review your prayer time. So this is not prayer. This is you thinking back. This is you revising. Well, I won't use the word revising. It sounds too much like hard work. How did the prayer get started? Were you aware of God's presence, or was there a sense that you were simply talking by yourself? Did any parts of the prayer seem especially alive as you prayed? Did you have times of strong convictions or emotions, and if so, what were they? Did they seem to be moving you closer to God or further away? What difficulties did you encounter? Did you feel tired or bored or experience other barriers? Did you find your mind wandering, and if so, to what? What were you praying over when this happened? How did you respond? Did you have any sense of being called to respond or carry out some action? If so, what was it? What was the general tone of your prayer? Was it warm and loving? Was it difficult or painful? Was it dark? Was it reassuring? Was it sobering? Was it foggy? See, we're talking about discipline here. After every football game, you have a debrief. What did we do well? What didn't we do well? After every race that's run, the athlete sits down with their coach. Okay, what did I do well? What I didn't do well? If you want to take prayer seriously, it's good to review it. See how you get on. So, now we come to that point where I said that you're going to get a chance to pray on your own. Remember what I said? Focus time. Deal with any issues. Let the Bible speak to you. What's God saying to you? And then, how did you get on? So, you've got literally, shall we say, I'll say 5 minutes, but it'll probably be a bit longer. Go and find a space miles away from anywhere else. And if you have trouble moving, just stay where you are and everybody else will disappear. Go on, off you go. And spend some time praying. Can we have some music, please, Derek? Just not too loud, just to help blot out the other sound so we can focus. And I'll call you back when we've finished. I might do it with a song. We'll see how we get on. Remember, you're talking to your mum, or maybe you're talking to your dad. I don't mean that literally. I'm talking about God here. Or maybe you're talking to your best friend. If you could start making your ways back now. And as you come, think about all those questions that John Ortberg said about how did you get on. Review your prayer time as you come back. In Jesus' eyes, praying together was also very important. Listen to what he says in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 18. I tell you the truth. This is him talking to his disciples. I tell you the truth. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there I am with them. See, the important thing is people coming together and agreeing what they're praying for. If you look at the Acts of the Apostles, you'll find that before anything significant happens, the thing that triggers it happening is disciples meeting together to pray. It's as if that is the latch that opens the door for the Holy Spirit to flood into the situation. That's the window that swings open when people meet together to pray. And it's not as if it's magic. I've said this before. It's not magic. It's not, well, we do this and we'll agree about it and voila. No, it's not that at all. It's when God sees Christians agreeing about things and they're expressing their agreement to him in prayer, then he knows that we're ready for him to use. Then he knows we've reached the mark. Then he knows that we can actually do what he wants us to do, without fighting amongst ourselves about it or whatever. Think of the biggest harm that's ever done to the mission of Jesus. It's done by Christians not agreeing about things. So there's a profound, profound truth here. He wants to see us praying together, honestly and openly. When we do that, something profound starts to happen. We get closer to each other. We start to trust each other. And God looks down and goes, yes, they're ready. Now I can do something with them. Now I can pour out my spirit on Pentecost. What were they doing before Pentecost? They were praying together. What were they doing before Paul was sent out in his first missionary journey? They were praying together. Look through the Acts of the Apostles. Look through the history of the church. Before anything significant happens, or put it another way, before God uses us to do something significant, it always begins with us realizing our need to meet together in prayer. And when people do that, God goes, oh, thank goodness, I've waited long enough. Woof. Now they're up for it. Now they're up for the tasks I've got ready for them. Lindsay and I experienced that in Pakistan, and I'm not going to tell you about it, but it's just brilliant. We saw a church that was just useless, drawn together out of need to pray, and outpouring the Holy Spirit as a result. It's the sign God's looking for, that we're ready, that we're mature enough, that we're able enough for him to use. He can use us as individuals, if you like, in wee bits and bobs here and there, but a movement of the Spirit needs a lot of individuals in tune with each other. How do we tune into each other? We do it when we meet together to pray. It's a really serious thing. If we want our school to change, we need to pray about it. We need to meet together to pray about it. If we want our community to change, we need to meet together to pray about it. If we want our city to change, we need to meet together to pray about it. If we do, it won't be us doing anything. It'll be God. So, oh, well, good. Yep. I've got the right people in place. They're meeting together to pray. That's the sign I'm looking for. They're ready. Just watch this. In a sense, that's what Try Praying is about. And in a sense, that's also what 24/7 prayer movement's about. So, cue DVD, Derek. Let's see if this works.
Have you ever wondered why so many people pray? Well, Albert Einstein said that there's really only two ways to live, as if nothing's a miracle or as if everything's a miracle. Either life's a fluke and we're just a bunch of highly evolved animals on a big rock lost in space, or there's a creator behind creation, a God behind goodness. And if so, then connecting with him in prayer is pretty much the most mind-blowing thing you can do. Archaeologists keep digging stuff up that shows we've always prayed. People of many faiths pray daily. Even atheists admit to praying sometimes. Real prayer is a two-way conversation with the living God who loves and listens to the things we say. Jesus said, "Ask anything in my name and it'll be done." We have a chance to ask for peace, healing, help, or whatever we need. Life matters, you matter, your choices, thoughts, prayers, and actions echo in eternity. But in case you hadn't noticed, God is pretty much invisible and not always easy to hear. There are distractions, disappointments, and questions that we all share. That's why 24/7 prayer does stuff to help thousands of people in hundreds of places connect with God in new ways. People are learning to pray by just praying. Why don't you take on the challenge of a 24/7 prayer room? Just gather your friends, find a place, pick a week, get creative in the space, and fill every hour of the week with a chain of prayer. Prayer vigils like these have been changing lives for 2,000 years, and today millions are discovering that God's real, life's a miracle, and the most powerful thing you can ever do is to pray.
Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything you ask for, it will be done for you by my Father in heaven. For where two or three come together in my name, there am I with them." So here's the second exercise. I want you to get into twos and threes. And I want you to talk about what you would like to see God doing. And it could be something to do with your work, or your school, or your community, or your street, or your football club, or your church. What would you like to see God doing? Talk about it and see if you can agree. Okay? And I'll just give you a couple of minutes to do that, or maybe three. Could you do that? Is everybody quite clear what they're doing? Yeah, off you go. And then we've got an exercise when you've done all that. What would you like to see God doing? Palmerston Place Church, which is right down at near Haymarket. The whole of the city is coming together to pray, and we're coming together to pray for each other and for the city, and everybody's welcome to that as well. So that's on Tuesday the 15th at 7 o'clock. I say this because I'm organizing it, so I'm trying to get as many people as possible to come along. But it'll be good. You'll recognize some faces when you come. Keep praying. Keep praying for these things. You want me to pray that Alex Salmon will come? Yeah, well, there's a thought. There is a thought. Because God loves Alex Salmon. It's 7 o'clock. So, we've got a song to finish with. And then we could finish with the grace or something like that. I don't know. Yeah, the messy church grace.
Well, taken from probably the best known prayer there is.